Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, my name is Howard Hughes. This is The Unexplained. And a very special edition, this, because we left the last edition of The Unexplained at the end of part one of our conversation with Ray Hernandez, a man closely connected with Dr. Edgar Mitchell and his organization Free, who are doing some groundbreaking, never-done-before research on ET contact, but also the idea that phenomena like healing and many other phenomena are all connected, which is an exciting thing, and I don't think anybody's attempted really to do that before. So, Ray Hernandez in Miami, here we are with another edition of The Unexplained. This is part two of our conversation, the very first time that I've ever done this, and I think you definitely justify this, because we'd never have been able to get into your research findings preliminary. So, Ray, thank you for waiting for me to do all of that. We're into part two of this conversation. It's another edition of The Unexplained, and this is the good stuff. This is the preliminary findings of Free's research. You take me where you want to.
Thank you, Howard. Thank you. First of all, I forgot to let your audience members know our website, the website of our organization, which is titled the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters, i.e. Free. Our website is experiencer.org. That's experiencer.org. And all of our research data from phase one and phase two is embedded in the top menu titled Research. And you will have open access, like no other organization has done before, to the data as it's coming out for our experiencer research study. Now, if I may, Howard, let me talk a little bit about the members of our board of directors and our research committee, because it's important to know that this is not just Joe Schmo from the street corner that's doing this. As I said before, our four co-founders are Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who's now recently deceased, Dr. Rudy Shields, who is an emeritus professor of astrophysics at Harvard University. He's 75 years old. He's one of the world's leading astrophysicists, and one an academic battle with Sir Stephen Hawking as to the true nature of black holes. And Rudy was also a very dear friend and colleague of the late Dr. John Mack, who was one of the pioneers of working with experiencers of UFO-related contact. And then the other one is Mary Rodwell, who I consider the number one investigator in this field. She's from Australia, originally from the UK, and she has an amazing book titled Awakening, which anyone that has had any type of UFO-related contact experiences, this is a therapy book for you, because I needed that book. I wish I would have known about that book in my first year.
And let's be frank about it. Mary Rodwell, you have to thank for you getting involved in this whole thing and being able to take it further.
Oh, yes. Mary is my godmother. She was the one that initially pierced this all together. She stimulated it all.
Well, yeah, we'll just explain that, as you may have heard on the previous edition of The Unexplained, you were having more and more experiences. You didn't know who to talk to, where to turn. So you fired out a whole collection of emails to people in this field, like Mary Rodwell, but you got no response. And then suddenly, after you'd had one experience, I think at a traffic junction, yeah?
Correct. It's in a highway, in the middle of a highway, in the traffic jam.
Right, which must have been a terrifying thing, even if it was revelatory. And then you went home, and lo and behold, after a gap of, was it 6 weeks, you had a contact from Mary Rodwell.
I had sent the email out 6 months earlier.
Mm, 6 months.
And then the same day of me being taken out of body, in the middle of a traffic jam and put inside this wheel that's spinning around on the contact modalities and given a direct message of what I needed to do, that same afternoon, I got an email from Mary Rodwell responding to an email that I had sent 6 months earlier.
Right, and that led you to connections with the other people, Dr. Rudy Shield, and also, ultimately, Edgar Mitchell himself.
Correct. Rudy then called me the very next day at 9:30 in the morning, based upon an email that he received from Mary, and I didn't know who this fellow was. And then it was Rudy that told me that I needed to contact his mentor, which he said was Dr. Edgar Mitchell, and he gave me his telephone number. And then Edgar invited me to his house the very next day.
And as we said, the man who sowed the seeds for all of this to happen, this research, was Edgar Mitchell himself. He believed, for reasons that I guess he explained to you, that you were the guy to do this. You were the catalyst.
Correct. And then he encouraged us to form an organization, and we formed an organization based upon the four of us as the co-founders. And then little by little, we started working on the mission statement, what we'd be doing. And we then started attracting other academics and other researchers into FREE. And we now have a 10-member board of directors. And let me just very briefly go over to who these people are, because it's very important. We have two co-chairs of our research committee. Both of them are retired professors. One is Dr. John Klimo, which is recently retired after 40 years teaching psychology. And he's one of the world's most renowned researchers on the paranormal. His most famous book is titled Channeling, and that's been written, translated into 18 languages. And then he also taught, importantly for our purposes, research methodology for over 40 years. So he is a professor who taught how to do research for over 40 years. So he assisted us in developing the research methodology for our study. The other co-chair of our research committee is Dr. Bob Davis, who I think you interviewed on his radio show, on your radio show a while back ago. And Dr. Bob Davis is a retired professor of neuroscience. He's a professor of the brain. And the reason he became involved in all of this was because about 3 or 4 years ago, he and his wife were on vacation in the desert of Arizona. And all of a sudden, these two UFOs appeared doing these 90-angle turns, putting on a show for them. And at that point, he realized that, oh, my God, you know, what in the world is this? And began researching UFOs. And he eventually wrote a book titled UFOs, Should We Believe? And Howard, are you still there?
I certainly am. I'm yes. Listening.
Thank you. And so the other professor we have is the dean of this research, which is Dr. Leo Sprinkle. Dr. Leo Sprinkle is 85 years old. He's a retired professor of psychology at the University of Wyoming. And he is the first academic to have ever written an academic article on individuals that have had UFO-related contact experience. And what he became well-known in this field was that he administered a series of psychological profile studies. I forgot the formal name of it, but it's the Minnesota Mental Health Assessment Test. And it's basically, it's a test to determine whether you're crazy or not, okay?
Where do you come into all of this then, Ray?
Okay, well, we all of it, all of a sudden, these people, these academics heard about what we're doing. And then they wanted to join us. And where I came about was that I was sort of like the organizer of all of this. I was the person in the middle, inside that wheel, putting everything together, organizing meetings, trying to set up meetings for what agenda we should be doing, prioritizing the methodology. And then all these academics, and there's several others as part of our group. We also have, for example, non-academics, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She's written 62 books on the paranormal. And she herself is an experiencer.
And somebody else that I've interviewed, yeah.
Yeah, correct. We also have Kathleen Martin, who she herself is an experiencer. She wrote the book on Benny and Barney Hill. Betty Hill was her aunt. And she's written two books with Stan Friedman as well. From the very beginning, she's a member of our board of directors.
So, all right, you have the A-team here, and you decide between you to do the definitive experience of research, which is
correct,
what we were
correct.
Talking about. And now
and
you have preliminary findings.
Correct. In the previous show, I talked about our methodology. We also have under research, if you go to our website, experiencer.org, under the section menu section titled research, you would also see a document titled methodology. And so I don't want to go over those details, but it's there. Now, let me go over and also say that our phase one and phase two research findings are in our website. So everything that I'm telling you, you could go to the website and check it out. Now, let me start off with our most profound finding. I think it's quite unanimous among our advisory board. And let me give a preface to this, because this is extremely important, Howard, okay? There's a book that was published by one of the leading academic scholars on near-death experiences. His name is Dr. Kenneth Ring. He, together with Dr. Bruce Grayson, are probably the top two academic researchers on NDEs. They've been focused solely academically on NDEs for over a 30-year period. So we're not talking Joe Schmoes here. Dr. Bruce Grayson is a medical doctor, was a tenured medical doctor at the faculty at the School of Medicine at the University of Virginia, and he was associated with the Division of Perceptual Studies. Now, University of Virginia in the United States is a highly regarded academic institution. I would say in the top, you know, within the top 20 of U.S. academic institutions. We're not talking about a little community college here, okay? Also, Dr. Kenneth Ring was a tenured faculty member of the Department of Psychology at the University of Connecticut, okay? And Connecticut is one of our, is a major state in the United States. So over 20 years ago, Dr. Kenneth Ring did a study where he compared over 150 individuals that have had near-death experiences with 150 people that have had UFO-related contact experiences. But what he mainly focused on was not the details of the experience. What he focused on was the outcome. How were these people before their experiences, and how are they now? And he asked close to 200 questions in a statistical study, and his findings were that both the people that have had near-death experiences and UFO-related contact experiences resulted in the same personality type, so what we did is we duplicated 100 of those questions and we put it into our survey. You know, what are the psychological profiles of these individuals now after they've had all of these experiences many years later and have been able to digest them? What we found out was that we duplicated all of Dr. Ring's findings from over 20 years ago.
And when you say that you duplicated them, how exactly were they similar?
Let me give you the actual questions that we asked. And then let me give you a large sample of them, you know, so you can get the idea. Okay, these are the possible choices, answer choices for all of these questions that are to follow. Okay, strongly increased somewhat, had not changed, decreased somewhat, decreased strongly. Okay, so let me just ask you the top two categories of increased, strongly increased, and increased somewhat. Okay, so here's a question: my desire to help others. Okay, strongly increased 50%, increased somewhat 23%. So right there we have 73% of the individuals, their desires to help others has increased.
Which indicates the experience they had, whatever it might have been, was a profound one.
We were talking about, you're correct. The UFO-related contact experience was such a profound experience that it didn't change them to be, you know, less helpful to others. It now all of a sudden, they're very helpful to others, okay? That's just one question. But let me go over some of these other questions. My compassion for others, okay? The total amount, again, was 78% has strongly increased my compassion for others. My appreciation of the ordinary things of life, we're talking now 75%. My ability to listen patiently to others has now 68% has increased. Okay.
Remind me of the sample size again.
Oh, this sample size here, this came from phase two. Now, phase two, we had 2,200 individuals for phase one, okay? For phase two, we asked very, very detailed questions. So a lot of people just saw those questions. Well, they don't apply to me. You know, I'm not taking it, you know? A lot of people that have it.
So as you said, you had a degree of self-selection. The ones who didn't want to go that far basically ruled themselves out.
Ruled themselves out. And as the phases increase, the more intensity of the questions and the experience experience increase. Okay, so first, for the first phase, we had 2,200 people. For phase two, we've had 1,220 individuals.
Well, those are staggering results then, the compassion thing and the connectedness to other people in a survey of so many people.
Of so many people, correct, correct. Now, here's another thing. My interest in psychic phenomenon, we're talking 79% has increased, either strongly or increased somewhat. Now, again, strongly increased, most of them are in the high 50s, the low 60s, okay? So it's not like it's just, you know, increased somewhat. Most of them are like tremendous increases.
And can you be sure through the questions that you use, because we know that the phrasing of questions is terribly important, yes. We see this in political surveys, has not prompted them to give you the answer that you want?
Well, that's why we're asking them in phase three for open-ended questions, okay? We asked an open question of how have you changed in all of these categories? You know, you're interested in material things in life, you're interested in this, you're interested in the ecology of our planet, you know, blah, 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 you know, all of these different questions we asked them in an open-ended category. Okay. Then for the formal interviews, we're going to be asking them the same questions again. So these are not going to be structured numbers, you know, from 1 to 5. These are going to be open-ended, that they'll be able to give us these details.
And how will that work? Explain to me exactly. You've got somebody sat in front of you and you want to ask them an open-ended question. What kind of open-ended question will you ask?
Okay, for phase three, we asked 70 of these open-ended questions. For example, we ask them, have you ever seen a UFO? And if so, can you please describe the details of that experience? Okay, now, some people have seen 20 different UFOs 20 different times. So that's why these people are saying it's so cumbersome, because they will have to write out these 20 different experiences. Okay, we'll say, have you ever seen a non-human intelligent being physically seen it? Okay, can you describe the details of that experience? Now, a good many of the people have, for more than one time, they've had encounters with these entities. So they will be describing all of those experiences, all those details. So that's what I meant by open-ended questions. Now, in the interview, we'll be asking these same questions, but we'll be starting off with very, very wide open-ended questions and then focusing down to very specific questions. So in the beginning of all of these categories, we've got 6 categories, we're asking with very wide open-ended questions. So we're not going to be pushing them in any direction. It's like they're going to be pushing us.
Okay. Right. And so what you'll be able to do by using those open-ended questions is, because of the sample size, you will be able to overlay one person against another, and you will be able to see where there are commonalities in the stories, in the responses that you get. And because these people, as far as we know, don't know each other, can't know each other, that will give you something meaningful.
Yes, no, there's numerous methodological issues associated with us, and you just illustrated just some of them. Excuse me. But we'll be able to do cross-comparative analysis. Like, for example, the people that have had, let's say, small gray type of experiences, okay, those that stated that it was a negative experience, compare that with the spiritual answers that they answered. Okay, numerous types of cross-comparative type of questions that we could ask, that we could then say, you know, the people that they're that have had other family members exposed to these experiences, those are the people that are see these experiences more positive. For example, that's just one example. Mm. We can compare how many people see them positive or negative versus how many people have had other members of their family members and which family members. So we could do these types of cross-comparative questioning.
And I know the mental aspect is terribly important to you as a team, but we do know that this is, in some respects, a very disturbed world, and there are many disturbed people in this disturbed world. Are you absolutely sure, and I know we've been across this ground a little already, that the people that you're hearing from are not just simply suffering from some mental delusion?
Well, we've already crossed that bridge many, many times, because there have been 5 previous studies done by PhD psychologists, whether abductees or experiences of UFO-related contact experiences are mentally deranged or mentally unstable. Okay. As I said before, Dr. Leo Sprinkle has done two of these studies. And we also thoroughly reviewed the other studies that have been done by these psychologists. And what all of these studies concluded, all of them, without one exception, that there's the normal distribution curve of nutty folks to normal folks, you know?
So there is, in amongst people who've had or claim to have experiences, all of the statistical correlations that would exist among people who haven't had experiences, it's exactly the same?
Exactly.
Wow,
exactly.
Well, that's a big surprise to me.
You find that, for example, there's 5% of people have, you know, some mental issues, right, in society in general, these studies found that they were like 5% of these people. Leo did a study that he had about 150 people, almost 200 people in these studies. And he's repeated this over the years. They just have not been, you know, published because you just can't find academic journals to publish these things. You know, how many people are crazy, the ones that have had abduction experience or UFO experience?
Because, look, doing this show, I've interviewed many people over the years. I've interviewed quite a few who have told me stories that I think are remarkably credible. They're not people who I, you know, would consider to be deranged or strange in any way. However, I've interviewed one or two who I genuinely have thought, I wish they'd get help. The problem, isn't it?
Yeah, no. I've interviewed quite a few as well, Howard. You know, people that would call to us for experience or support. We have a peer-to-peer program, support program that we've assisted over 450 people in the last 2.5 years.
Really? That's terribly important, this experience or support, because people who've had these experiences, some of them, I mean, you didn't know how to handle it. Let's face it. It was something terribly disturbing to you. And there are gradations of this. Some people are left scared out of their wits for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, and if you go to the internet, it's all full of garbage. It's even more frightening if you go to the internet. So we do have a website, and we do have an email contact, and just say that you would like to have a support buddy. And when the program is called the Peer-to-Peer Support Program. And there are some people there. For example, one woman, we referred her to a PhD psychologist who's a member of our group. And she did, this was locally, this person did meet with this person locally. And, you know, because of patient confidentiality issues, you know, she told me that she had referred the patient to a medical doctor, you know, to a psychiatrist. Okay, so that led me to believe that this person was had issues, you know, had troubles, you know. But there are a lot of people out there, Howard, okay? But the point that I'm getting at is that it's the normal distribution for society. Now, some of these people that might be a little bit tinged, okay, once you have these experiences, it might drive them off, you know, the edge, you know, even further. So the reason why we didn't go to try to implement all these psychological profiles on these individuals, first of all, is the cost. It's very cost prohibitive. It costs, I think, it's $350 to administer one test to one person. Okay. Secondly, to be able to do this, we've had over 70 countries, people from over 70 countries that have taken this survey. Mm. So you just can't logistically do it. So what we did
where's the money coming from for all of this, Ray?
Well, there's very little money for this. The program that we're using, SurveyMonkey, is $300 a year. All of this, the toil, all the sweat for this is sweat equity. No one's being paid for this. This is all volunteers. Yeah. As I said,
but there might be those who would ask, and please don't take this the wrong way. Yeah, you know, you're using this SurveyMonkey thing, which I know is used for many things, and it's comparatively cheap, which is good. Yeah. But if you're a collection of such high-level academics, how are you not able to involve some of the top research institutions in the world to pay for this?
No one is interested in this. Now, let me even tell you, Howard, and this is, again, very important to note, okay? Dr. Edgar Mitchell wrote a letter, in his own handwriting, okay, signed letter to the top UFO conferences in the United States. He sent it to the folks at the International UFO Conference. That's yearly done in Phoenix, Arizona. He sent it to the folks at Contact in the Desert, which have a major conference with, you know, almost 1,000 people in California, in the desert of California. He sent it to MUFON, which is the major UFO organization in the United States, encouraging one of our two academics to invite them to present the findings of our free experiencer study. Okay? No one was interested.
And why do you think that
no
is?
No one was interested.
Is that because they realize that you're using $300 worth of SurveyMonkey? Is that why?
Let me finish the question, Howard, to get to that. So even internally, the people that might be receptive to these things are not interested whatsoever.
I don't understand why, Ray. Why is this?
Universities don't even want to touch us. Now,
well, okay, we can't leave aside the point of why are these people not interested?
Okay, let me give you the specific response of the folks at the International UFO Organization, the International UFO Congress, okay? The response was that, well, we had Kathy Martin that did a similar presentation 2 years ago. Now, remember I told you in the first interview, Kathy Martin just used 50 people. We've got thousands of people. Kathy Martin only asked 50 questions. We've got four phases where the actual questions are over 700 questions, let alone the formal interviews. Okay. So you can't compare this little tiny study with this major comprehensive research study. Okay. Then what he said, I said, well, I explained to him the differences, that this is, you know, what Kathy did on steroids, okay? And then he said, well, we've already got David Jacobs is debating Barbara Lamb at our conference to see whether UFOs are bad or good, okay? I said, well, you just don't understand what we're doing. We're not talking about whether the ETs are bad or good.
But it is. I mean, look, I've got your brochure here, your leaflet about it all, and it looks very impressive. It's, you know, the pictures of the people involved, very clear mission statements. It seems remarkable to me, unless there's some big flaw in what you're doing. And, you know, it must be very frustrating for you that...
Oh, it's showing out in this interview.
This is not, on the front page of many of the world's great newspapers.
Yeah, but that's just an idea of how frustrating this is, you know, that here you have all these speakers talking about ancient alien stuff, you know, being headliners at all of these shows, and a good many of them don't even talk about experiences. It's all ancient alien stuff. And yet here we are with real live academics doing a real life academic study, the first ever in the world, and yet no one could give two hoots about. So it's extremely frustrating.
All right, where do you stand with the research now? Now, you've got a phase one, you've got a phase two.
Correct. As I said, I won't go over all the details of the research studies now. We certainly can if we got a little bit more time. But we're now in the middle of phase three. The phase three is the written responses to open-ended questions. We've had over 750 individuals that have answered phase three.
And that's worldwide?
That's worldwide, yeah. For phase one... We've had over 70 countries, individuals from 70 countries, all in English. Mm-hmm. We also have the study running in the Spanish language. We've had 450 people, that have taken phase one in the Spanish language.
Well, that's very important because a lot of, from what I'm reading in the popular press, you know, a lot of these things have happened in countries like Mexico and Brazil.
Oh, yes, yes. Now, we've gotten from... responses from most of the countries in Latin America.
Actually, I do realize that Brazil is Portuguese, isn't it? But Latin America, very important market.
Yeah, correct. All the Spanish. We also have translations in French, and we also are finishing the translations in German. Now, again, everything is being done by volunteers. If there's a team of volunteers of Portuguese-speaking folks, okay, we'll do it. We'll move forward in the Portuguese language. I've tried. I've sent emails out. Edgar has sent emails out. Rudy has sent emails out to numerous people that are researchers in this field in the Portuguese language, and we've got no feedback whatsoever, no response. You know, people are doing their own thing, but we need assistance. We need volunteers in multiple languages. I've been in communication with two Mandarin-speaking experiencers, and they were too scared to come out, you know, publicly to help us out.
And do the phenomena and the responses to the phenomena and the feelings that people have about the phenomena, are they the same whatever country you're in, whether you're in Beijing or Boston?
Pretty much the same, very much the same. We asked the question of the type of entity that people had seen. Again, we could have literally, you know, hours on your show going over all of our data results. So I would like people really to go into our website, experiencer.org, look up the menu section titled Research, and we will have numerous PDF files with the different categories for our research. But one of the categories that we asked is the type of entity being seen. And if you don't mind a second, if I could pick that out and just go over it with you.
Please do.
Okay. Let me go over very briefly phase one. Phase one is our short survey. You could do it in 15, 20 minutes, half an hour tops. And then let me answer that question for a second, Howard. We asked, have you seen an intelligently controlled craft in the sky or on the ground that was not man-made? 114 people said yes. They have seen that UFO. We asked, what did the craft do? I won't go over the details of that. Were there any other witnesses that also saw the UFO craft with you? 65% had witnesses. Okay. We're talking of, you know, over 1,000 people. Have you, let me see, experienced any missing time, such as arriving much later than expected, for which you cannot find any reasonable explanation, or you realize that time had progressed much more rapidly than expected? Well, we had 949 people said yes. Have you, okay, let me go on to skip that question. Have you heard telepathic messages, an external voice or information in your head speaking to you? Well, we had 1,148 people that said yes. This is an important question, this one here. Do you believe that you possess information about advanced technology, advanced physics, or other scientific information that you've never read or learned in your normal environment? 715 people said yes. That's one of the commonalities of a lot of experiencers. All of a sudden, they have all this knowledge of advanced technology or science, and we're working with our free physicists. When people give us something in writing, of like a download they got, we send it to this physics group.
And what sorts of results do you get from the physicists?
Oh, many of them are like, how the hell this guy know this stuff, you know? This is like a...
And could any of this material that's being downloaded to these people, they say, be of any use to science right now?
It can be, but who the hell's going to take it seriously, okay? That's where we're doing all of this, you know, under the table.
But this is complicated, so I'm sorry if I keep butting in with questions. Yes. I don't mean to interrupt you all the time.
Yeah. I know that you have a lot of questions.
But this is anonymized, so you're not able to work out whether there's a high proportion of police officers, school teachers, people in prison. You won't know any of that.
We will be asking that question during the interview. Okay. We also asked that question, what type of career they have. We had like, I don't know, over 50 different categories of careers. So if they chose to identify that, they could do that. And then in the interviews, they can talk about, you know, what they work as, you know. But obviously, we don't want the city or any of that type of personal identifying information. Then off the record, off the interview tape, if they want to tell us personal information, they could certainly do that. But that obviously will not be recorded.
Okay, so at least you'll get a handle on the sorts of things that they do, and you might be able to come up with some kind of interesting statistics there.
Correct.
So give me a very clear statement.
Howard, can I interrupt you for a second? A couple of key questions. We asked them if they've had out-of-body experiences. 364 people said yes, they have had an out-of-body experience. Okay. We've also asked them whether they have had a near-death experience. And almost 25% of the people have had a near-death experiences. The people that have physically seen an ET right in front of them, okay, physically, 979 people. Then we get into the specific types. This is the question that you had asked me earlier, okay? The number one category of the type of ET that are being seen by experiencers is the human-looking. Some of them referred to as Palladians, whatever, but they don't come all blonde and blue eyes, okay? A good many of them are seen as tall, you know, 7 feet tall to possibly 8 feet tall. A good many of them are seen as the normal height of a human. They come with different eyes, different colored eyes, different colored hair, but a good many of them are blonde and blue eyes, but not the majority at all.
Okay? Is it true, as they say in popular fiction, you know, popular research that the Greys are the bad guys?
No. Let me go into those categories. Okay, let me go into the next section. The humans were seen by 54%. The energy being, actually, that's 55% for the energy being, okay? Pure energy, like what I saw, that plasma energy being, that was an energy being. Again, the specifics of what it looked like, the details, that'll come later on in the interviews, okay? We also have got an artist that's doing, he has over 50 drawings of different types of grays. So if they say, okay, I had a short gray, was it gray number one, gray number two, gray number three? Oh, stop right there, it was number three, you know? So during the interviews, we're going to go through that.
Okay.
The next type of category of being was the short gray, that was 51%. Okay, the tall gray was 32%, the insectoid was 23%, the reptilian was 26%, small animal type was 15%, large animal type was 13%. Now, the vast majority of these people have seen more than one type of entity. Now, can I answer the question now about the different types of entities, the responses that people had?
I'm very keen for you to do it.
Okay. You asked me the question about the short grays. Are they the evil, evil types? Well, we asked this question. Are they mainly positive, mainly negative, equally positive and negative, neutral, or I'm not sure? Okay. Let's go with the mainly negative. For the short gray, 11.5%. Out of 637 people have seen short grays. 637. Okay, so mainly negative is only negative 1.5%. Equally positive and negative was 16.7%. Mainly positive was 28.6%. And then the rest was either neutral or I'm not sure. So as you can see, the people that said it was mainly negative was 11.5%. Now, does that dispel a lot of the information that's circulating on the internet?
Sounds to me like from your research, the grays are getting the bad rap.
At least the short grays. Now, that was from 637 people that had physical experiences with the short gray. Now, the tall grays, 417 people had direct contact experiences with the tall grays, okay? And we put the category of from between 5 feet to 9 feet tall. Now, mainly negative was 11%. Mainly positive was 31.5%. Equally positive and negative was almost 13%. Now, let's go to the next category. Okay, insectoid. 325 people have described their ET as an insectoid looking like. Mainly negative, 10%. Mainly positive, 33%. Equally positive and negative, 9%. Next category, reptilian. The evil dreaded reptilian that everyone, 100% of the internet says are all dreaded. Okay, well, we asked that question. Mainly negative was only 22.5%. Okay, that's it, 22.5%. Mainly positive was 17, almost 18%. Okay, so we got 22.5 to 18%. Equally negative and positive was 13%. The vast majority, which was 47% approximately, were either neutral or I'm not sure. 30.5% was I'm not sure. So again, focusing just on the mainly negative, 22.5%. Now again, this dispels, this is 348 people. Again, this is not a little 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 people I've seen reptilian. This is 348 people. Okay. The next category, human looking. 579 people have stated they've seen human looking beings. Mainly positive, 61%. Huge number. Mainly negative, 5%. And again, I'm rounding off, okay? Equally positive and negative, 10%. And then neutral was 11.5%. I'm not sure, 13%. So again, human looking, the vast majority were mainly positive. We have the categories for the spirit and the ghost-like. The negative was only 6% for that, for mainly negative. The small animal type, 5.75%. Now, again, this is not 5 or 6 people that answered small animal type. This is 261 people that they saw a little animal, you know, appearing to them.
Which is something that you don't read. I mean, you read about greys and humanoids much more, you know, Nordics, much more than you read about little animals.
Yeah, correct, correct. And so this is where the interview is going to come in, you know, because we'll be asking them to describe what it looked like. And again, this is not widely circulated. Only folks in Latin America have talked about, and other key people, other experiences, that animals are appearing. Now, the large animal type, that Sasquatch might possibly be put into that category, but not necessarily. But the large animal type, 11% were seen as mainly negative. Mainly positive was 32.3%. Positive and negative was 5.6%. So as you can see, this is real live hard data from, you know, from approximately 1,000 experiencers that have directly seen these types of of entities.
Look, a lot of people watch Family Guy and, you know, like to have fun and believe in humor. We've talked about people being mentally deluded. Are you sure that some of these people are not having a laugh and hoaxing you?
Well, that's always a possibility, but in order for these people to take all of these surveys, they would have to contribute, you know, hundreds of hours worth of their time.
And you deliberately formulated it, as you said, to make it not easy.
No. That wasn't deliberate. It's just that we wanted our study to be extensive, not to be some Mickey Mouse study. Okay? And in order to be an extensive study, you have to spend a lot of time getting this data. And good quality data takes a long time.
Are the really interesting people that you're going to be wanting to really spend some time with, presumably you have a core of people, all of whose experiences have been remarkably similar in a number of categories. If you get those people together, then you've got some really interesting people to talk with, haven't you?
Yes. No, definitely. We've gotten people that have described consciously being on a UFO craft together with other family members, including their children. We've got people that have been taken to other locations, other planets. We've got people that were giving instructions, like, for example, the science and the physics instructions. Tons of people, okay?
And if they've been given instructions and knowledge, why haven't they been passing it on more widely?
Well, who do you pass it on to? You know, some people have. We've had this experiencer that actually did a video for Rudy, a four-part video explaining some of the science and the physics she has received, her experiences on board the craft, what the craft looked like, what she was taught. You know, and she made those videos, and Rudy and I listened to it. But, you know, outside of that, I mean, what, you know, who do these people turn to?
Well, that I totally understand that. I mean, you had that problem yourself. Anybody. I mean, look, when I was 17 years of age, I mean, this is nothing. And it, you know, I've always wondered about it. When I was 17 years of age, at the door to my bedroom, I saw, and I swear to this day I saw it, a spindly creature about 4 foot tall, a kind of cream-coloured, very wiry long fingers, a very tall head, almost like a skeleton. And this thing realized I'd seen it and just walked to one side of the door so I couldn't see it.
Well, sounds like you saw, if it was 4 feet tall, sounds like you saw one of the categories of the short grays. The short grays, people do not describe them all uniformly. There's different types, many different
now,
types.
People, you know, I don't tell that story because I don't tell it because I'm sure people will think I'm a nut.
Well, have you talked about it on radio publicly before?
No, I've just talked about it now.
Okay, look at that. All right. Look at that.
That's Isn't a true that story. 17 years of age, and I saw it with my conscious eyes. You know, I hadn't been drinking wine or beer. I saw it in my bedroom.
And so you've waited how many years to tell the public that story, Howard?
Well, more than a couple of decades, let's put it that way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So imagine these people that are having these experiences, either themselves or with their family members. You know, who do you turn to? Okay. A lot of people had turned to certain organizations, which will not be named. But certain of these organizations, their focus is not really the experiencer, is to acquire other types of information. So what we're what we're trying to do is to establish the framework where you can people come out of the closet, because this information exists, this data exists, these people are having these experiences, this is a highly credible organization that's doing this. So once we publicize these things, hopefully other people can come out of the closet.
I understand. And so when
talk
people,
about their experiences.
When people read the quantities of people around the world you've spoken to, and when they look at the percentages who've experienced these things, you're hoping that all kinds of people who've also experienced but are afraid because perhaps of ridicule or whatever to come out will get in touch and join the process. So this is ongoing.
It's ongoing. It's going to continue even after we all die. And also what's on the internet is BS, is pure BS. For example, we asked this question in phase two. Remember, phase two is now for the hardcore experiencer now. Okay. We asked the question, how would you describe your ET contact experiences? Okay. So these are all people who have had ET contact. 1,067 people answered this question. Do you know that less than 5% said that their experiences were negative? But yet, if you go to the internet, it's the total opposite.
Well, if you go to the internet, it's all kind of bad and, well, it's not all kind of bad and scary, but a lot of it's bad and scary.
Correct. Well, here, let me go over the answers here, okay? Mainly positive was 67%. Mainly negative was 4.9%. Let's say 5% was mainly negative. Equally positive and negative was 17.6%. Neutral was 11.5%. Now, we need to find out during his interviews, why was it negative? Why was it positive? Why was it equally positive and negative? Why was it neutral? You know, to get at the actual data. Maybe it was negative because that ET that you saw scared the living daylights out of you and you had nightmares for the 2 or 3 years.
And of course, we haven't talked about whether people were experimented on, which some people have claimed to have been. They claim to have been abducted and experimented on.
We've had over 300 people that have talked about that. And we asked a series of questions related to that. So it seems like this is happening, but we just don't know the reasons why it's happening.
And in terms of experiments, is it mostly experiments on the, let's find a way of putting this nicely, on the reproductive system?
Well, that's one component of it, but it's not the main reason for this. The main reason is that people are being tested. For example, if there's a plague that's going to come out and wipe out humanity, right? These entities would know before we do, okay? Because they're taking, you know, samples from us. They're little scoop marks and holes. They're doing tests on us. And they have, let's say, as I said before, let's say if they have advanced technology a million years ahead of us, okay? They're able to undertake numerous things, okay? So that's one aspect of it. You know, just like you're getting animals and you're checking them for different types of diseases, okay? The other part would be, like, for example, the breeding part. Now, there's numerous speculations for that, for the breeding part. For example, let's say that these entities did seed us on this planet. They created humans, okay? Time for them, for some of these entities, might be totally irrelevant. Just like the concept of time doesn't exist, okay? It might be for some of these entities. Who knows? We're just speculating here. But it could be that there have been a reseeding of planet Earth. You know, every 50,000 years after we grow up, you know, like Atlantis, and our technology gets to the point where we're inventing the neutron bomb, and all of a sudden we're like, you know, can't get along with each other, and we're blowing the hell each other up. That
could happen. So we keep destroying ourselves and have to be helped to come back.
That is a possibility, a very good possibility here. Mm-hmm. Another possibility is, and this is the theory of Mary and many other people, is that we're slowly being upgraded. Okay. For example, they'll be putting in through our DNA for the children, for example, the kids that would have more telepathic skills. And that's what Mary's writing a book about, that, about children. And it appears that she's spoken with numerous children who've had contact experiences, and almost all of them are highly telepathic. We're seeing an increased amount in autistic children, and many of them are telepathic or have these type of telepathic skills. Hughes, she's a medical doctor trained at Harvard and John Hopkins Institute. She's working with autistic children and telepathic skills. So another theory is that humanity is being slowly upgraded. So who knows, maybe in 1,000 years, if we do survive that long, we'll be able to have the type of telepathic skills to be able to join the other ET civilizations at that level that they might be in. Again, in an infant stage, but at least to be able to communicate telepathically. Because telepathy does exist. It's been proven by numerous scientific organizations and academic institutions, professors out of Princeton, out of the University of Virginia, Duke University, the Ryan Research Lab, all over the place. They have literally thousands of academic studies that have proven that telepathy does exist, that precognition does exist. It might be at a low number, extremely low number, but the phenomenon does exist. So the what we're trying to get at is when we did our studies, we didn't even know what questions to ask. Okay. I mean, you know, where do we take this? You know, where no one's even done this before. So right now, later on, hopefully we might be able to address those type of questions, because we did ask numerous questions of what the ET told the experiencers. You know, did the ET tell you what's happening with the hybrid program? Well, we had 250 people that answered that question. And in the open-ended question, they'll say, well, this is what the ET told me about the breeding program. So we need to then go through all of that and then re-ask those questions in the formal interviews for the people that have had major type of experiences. And so by the end of what we finish, we might be able to have hypothetical potential answers to some of these questions that right now people are totally clueless on.
Okay, well, here's an interesting question, maybe. At the end of all of this, now you're doing the big interviews in the summer, you tell me, and I need to talk with you nearer that time about that.
Yes.
You will number crunch your data, and you will eventually bring it out. What use is it going to be to the world and to those people who've helped you?
Okay, first of all of our data, all of it, is being placed on our website. So everyone can have access to the data.
No, I don't doubt it'll be public, but what use would it be?
Yeah, and then later on, we want to be able to undertake a series of peer-reviewed academic publications. And the problem that we're going to be having is who's going to be accepting this data, so we'll be able to publicize it. So we are going to be attempting to publicize it academically. Secondly, we're going to be coming out with a series of books about different thematic areas. For example, we would have a book just on the hybrid program, because right now there's so much information going around on that. We will have information from over 400 people that have answered that question that we have worked with regarding the hybridization program.
And will you be hoping that some of them will allow you to use their names?
Well, later on, once we do the actual book publishing, we'll be contacting these individuals to see if any of them want to have their names revealed or not, or any type of sensitive information. And it'll be in writing, you know, that they'll be allowing us to do this. But that's way, way down the road. Again, we have books that we would like to come out on the association between near-death experiences and ET contact, on the topic of spirituality, on the topic of total and complete transformation. Like I told you before, was 85% of these experiencers have had a total transformation. People that were atheists are now highly spiritual. People that didn't care about the environment, all of a sudden they're very ecologically caring. People that very concerned about material well-being, all of a sudden did not care about money per se. You know, the total transformation.
And how have you changed?
The same thing. A total, complete transformation from someone that was a pure atheist into someone that is highly spiritual. Someone that was a total rationalist, you know, scientific looking, into someone that I'm open to explore almost anything. You know, someone that had concerned about, you know, material issues. All of a sudden, I don't give a damn. You know, I'm what type of car I'm driving. You know,
and on the brochure here for the Free Organization Foundation. Ray Hernandez is described as an IRS tax attorney and experiencer. Are you still, as of today in 2016, April 2016, are you still working as an IRS tax attorney?
Oh, yes, until I retire, which is going to be a very long time because my daughter's only 13 years old. But I'm public. I'm out in the open. I mentioned it to my boss. My boss actually had a paranormal experience as a result of a deceased relative. As a matter of fact, there's someone else in our group that has had a very, very close-up contact experience who that person has not mentioned to anyone except her mother. No one else.
Oh, it's amazing the people who are coming out of the woodwork. I'm sorry, I don't think I allowed you to answer the second part of my question there. You said that it would be peer-reviewed, hopefully peer-reviewed, and I'd asked you about what good do you think it would bring to the people and to the world. To know this information, what's it going to do for us?
Well, what it's going to do to humanity is, for the first time, have serious academics, not Joe Blow from Ancient Aliens, you know, writing a book, or some New Age metaphysical person, which, you know, I have nothing against those. I really learned a lot from those authors and researchers. But that this topic of UFO-related contact experiences has never been studied academically. So for the first time, we really have hardcore data derived academically, supervised by academics. And then our goal and objective is to encourage other experiencers to come out of the closet, to not face the fear and ridicule that these early pioneers, people like Whitley Strieber, for example, when he came out of the closet, the difficulties that I had waiting almost a year to talk to someone about these experiences. We wanted to make mainstream, just like near-death experiences. 30 years ago, NDEs were taboo subject. Now everybody's talking about NDEs in the mainstream. Oprah, like, it seems like every month, Oprah has a guest that's had a near-death experience on her show, you know. So we want to be able to take this phenomenon to that level of acceptability.
And what you've got to do is get, and this is, it seems to me like a mountain to climb for you, but I hope you're able to do it, is to get people to think, and academics to think, about the possibility that all of these things, NDEs and all the rest of it, are connected somehow.
That's the next step, which is even more difficult.
In Britain, good luck.
Yes, correct. It's all incremental. We know that that is the truth, that that is the reality, but it's going to be taking possibly many, many generations for humanity to totally understand that concept. But we want to be able to collect funds for a documentary titled The Physics of Contact with Non-Human Intelligence. And we have many of the world's leading physicists under the table that have agreed to participate in this. So we just need the funds for it. So if anyone out there is independently wealthy, we're not asking for a donation. This is going to be a business model where you'll be getting your money back plus interest.
Have you tried crowdfunding it?
We're developing a trailer now, like a 10 to 15 minute trailer on it, which will be in crowdfunding. But the target for this, again, with advanced animated graphics throughout this whole documentary, our target is about 300,000. And again, this is an investment. So if any other people that are investors, people with a lot of money that are experiencers, contact us through experiencer.org, and we could send you the full business plan together with 10 pages of script outline for this project. And again, it's numerous PhD physicists are going to be involved, and it's entitled The Physics of Contact with Non-Human Intelligence.
Well, it sounds like you've got an exciting time ahead, but also a bit of a fight on your hands. And as I say, as we say here in Britain, good luck, because you're going to need it. But please talk with me again, would you, Ray? I know I've had to ask you some difficult questions, and I hope you don't mind the fact that I have had to interject.
Ask them all, please.
Well, I've had to do that, and that's part of my job, really. People would expect that. Let's reconnect in the summertime when you're doing these interviews, and if any of the interviewers come across people who are willing to be more forthright about it and would like to talk to somebody like me, even if it was anonymous, put them in touch with me, and I will be fair with them.
Oh, no, you've been more than fair. This is a reality, just like in my own family, you know, and I just tell everybody. And I do have quite a few close friends that have had many of these profound experiences. Most of them are professionals. And I certainly would put them in contact with you, because it's important for the world to know that, for example, we have 5 medical doctors, Howard, that have had these types of experiences that I've personally spoken with. One is retired. He could certainly talk about it. But the other 4 are still practicing physicians. So
it would be difficult for their credibility, just like people in uniform find these things hard to talk about. Well, as I say, I can only reiterate, I wish you the best of luck. And I don't think, I might have mentioned it in passing once before, but I don't think I've talked about that experience that I had at 17. And I was a perfectly rational student at the time. And there you are. I said that I'd begged and prayed and asked for these things to contact me, but in fact I had something in my past that I can't explain. So, you know, maybe somewhere down the track, everybody has, maybe.
I think most people have had some, except they're not talked about. At least a close family member has had it. That's been my experience. When I mentioned it to folks, they've mentioned, well, maybe not me, but my mother told me the story, or my sister told me the story. So congratulations, Howard, for coming out of the closet.
And if people want to know about your work, what's the web address again?
The web address is experiencer.org. That's experiencer.org, and it's the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters.
Ray Hernandez, thank you very much indeed. Don't go anywhere. I want to talk with you in just a moment, but I have to do this first. So you've just heard Ray Hernandez on this show in Miami. Any thoughts about that? Drop me an email. You know you can. Go to the website, theunexplained.tv. Thank you very much to Ray Hernandez. Thank you to you for supporting this show, both the new radio show and this online version. Thank you to Adam, my webmaster at Creative Hotspot, for his hard work. If you want to get in touch with me, make a donation to the show, go to the website, theunexplained.tv. Lots more great guests in the pipeline here for The Unexplained. So until next we meet here, as ever, please stay safe. Please stay calm and please stay in touch. My name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained. I am in London. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.